Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedy is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. If you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict predecided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of how you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you just knew your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make, if your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen. And when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, thank you very much, Martin. I appreciate you giving that great disclaimer. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about some other subjects that are directly related to the correcting your status and why. So we will start with more federal glue. This is the topic about other things that come into play that differentiate you as a United States citizen as property versus a Union State citizen or an American national as one who has inalienable rights. You may also find it disturbing to know how an administrative procedure, no due process, just administration, can remove your children from you. In 1921, Congress passed the Shepherd-Towner Maternity Act that created the United States Birth Registration Area, referencing Public Law 97. It was done through the 67th Congress, through Session 1, Chapter 135. The Act allows you, doesn't mandate you, it allows you to register your children. It's voluntary. And they become then federal children. This does several things. Your children become subjects of Congress. In other words, they lose their state citizenship status. A copy of their birth certificate is sent to the Department of Vital Statistics in the state in which they were born. The original birth certificate is then sent to the Department of Commerce in the District of Columbia and to the State Department. It then gets forwarded to the International Monetary Fund in Europe. And your children's future labor and properties are put up as collateral against the public debt. Once a child is registered, a constructive trust is formed. The parents usually become the trustee, the person managing the assets of this trust. The child becomes an asset of the trust, and the state becomes the principal beneficiary of this trust. Reference the Uniform Trustees Power Act for further information on that. If the beneficiary does not believe the trustee is managing the assets of the trust optimally, the beneficiary can go through an administrative procedure to change trustees. This is the way the bureaucrats can take children away from their parents if the bureaucrat does not like the way the child is cared for. You may say that there is nothing wrong with this. If a parent is neglecting a child, then the state should remove the child from the parent's custody, some say. Under common law, a child can still be removed from the parent, but it takes 12 jurors from that county to do so. Theoretically, a bureaucrat can remove your children from you if you disagree with some unrelated administrative procedures, such as maybe homeschooling your child. And this is another way the government can intimidate citizens who question its authority. With all of this in mind, the statement that the president says every few months, our children are our most valuable asset. Well, now it takes on a different meaning. That is, your children are the assets. Part of the process of restoring state citizenship is revoking, in, to a degree, if you would, your birth certificate through a process called the revocation of signature power of attorney. This is not something that we do. The birth certificate is not revoked, then the courts consider you to be a 14th Amendment federal citizen, and that's really not accurate. Your birth certificate actually is the evidence that proves that you were born in a state and are a state citizen, and that's where we hang our hat. When the government communicates with corporations, it spells the name of the corporation in all uppercase or all capital letters. If the government refers to you with your name in all capital letters, it's actually meant to treat you like a corporation. A corporation is created by the government. Corporations have no rights. They have privileges, but no rights. The government gives its privileges, and the corporation must follow the rules of its creator. Now, you're not a corporation, and neither am I. A state citizen should challenge the government's assertions that he or she is a corporation. And how do you do that? By correcting your status and simply filing an affidavit into the record, declaring your citizenship, your political status as a citizen. And this applies to both postal matters as well as court documents. We gave the federal government the right to regulate commerce. Since the government has started usurping our sovereignty, well, you know, like before the Civil War or at the Civil War, our language has been subtly modified to include commercial terms. Most people do not realize or care that they are using commercial terms, but the courts do. In fact, the courts hang their hat on the fact that you're using commercial terms, ergo you must be in commerce. If you describe your actions in commercial terms in court, the judge will take silent notice of your status as being regulatable by the federal government. The commercial terms are typically all in uppercase. Instead of a birthing room, you're now born in a delivery room. Instead of traveling in your car, you're driving or operating a motor vehicle in what? Traffic. And you don't have guests in your car, you have passengers. Instead of a nativity, you have a date of birth. And you're not a worker. No, you're an employee. You don't own a house. You don't own land. What do you have? Real estate. These are some of the terms. These are the terms that you should become very familiar with. Why? Because that's what they're going to use in part to trip you up. A state citizen has the right to have any gun he or she wishes without it being registered. The federal citizen does not. In the District of Columbia, it's a felony to own a handgun unless you're a police officer or a security guard or the handgun was registered before 1978. The District of Columbia has not been admitted into the Union. Therefore, the people of the District of Columbia are not protected by the Second Amendment or any other part of the Bill of Rights. And, of course, that has now been extended over all the several states through the Buck Act of 1939, and, you know, for instance, the state of New York is a territory of the United States as opposed to New York, one of the, you know, earlier colonies that translated to become one of the states of the Union. This should prove that the gun control victim disarmament laws do not work in America, despite the lack of legal guns and illegal guns in the District of Columbia, crime is rampant. It's called murder capital of the world. If you're a federal citizen, you're using your Second Amendment arguments to protect your rights to keep your guns, you're going to be in for a surprise. Well, first by registering gun owners and then renaming them assault weapons and handguns, those in power will take away your civil rights to bear arms. But are they your civil rights? No. They're your natural rights as a citizen of one of the states. Only territorial citizens have civil rights. The Supreme Court has ruled that you are an individual that you as an individual have no right to protection by the police. Their only obligation, the police's only obligation, is to protect society as a general, not any individual. The real protection of state citizens is that they keep their guns. And it's not the Second Amendment, but the Ninth Amendment. We should notice that in Switzerland, every household must have, by law, a fully automatic machine gun and ammunition. You know, have you ever checked the crime rate of Switzerland? It's very, very low. In fact, if you look in the United States and you remove the top five Democrat-controlled states or cities specifically, remove just five cities, and we go from the third highest murder rate in the world to the 189th murder rate, three shy of being the last in line. And it's the Democrat states that have the strongest gun control legislation in place that are the most wicked and dangerous. A state citizen has the right to travel on the public easements, known as public roads. In fact, just use your search engine and put in these words, open by right to public vehicular travel. Again, open by right to public vehicular travel. In a nanosecond, you'll find that there's over a million references to that term. And you'll find most all of them with the Department of Transportation, clearly saying to everybody that wants to investigate that such and such a highway or byway is, quote, open by right to public vehicular travel. So, on the alternative, a federal citizen does not have this right. It's a privilege for a foreigner to travel in any of the several states. If you're a United States citizen, you are a foreigner in the state that you're sojourning, you're traveling. The state legislators can require foreigners and people involved in commerce, you know, chauffeurs, freight haulers, Uber drivers, and so forth, to be licensed and insured and to have their vehicles registered. When you register your car, do you know that you turn over total power of attorney to the state? At that point, it becomes a motor vehicle. It's no longer an automobile. If it is not registered, then it's not a motor vehicle. And there are no motor vehicle statutes to break. There are common law rules of the road. If you don't cause an injury to anybody, then you cannot be tried. If your car is registered, the state effectively owns your car. The state supplies a sticker to put on your license plate every time you re-register the motor vehicle. Look closely at the sticker on your plate. Just go out there and do it in the morning. You may be surprised to see that it says, quote, official use only, end quote. In some states, they do not use stickers on their plates. You may have seen municipal vehicles that have signs on them that say official use only. But why does yours? You do not own your car. You may have a certificate of title, but you probably do not have a certificate of origin. You are leasing the state's vehicle by paying the yearly registration fee. And because you're using their equipment, well, they can make the rules up on how it can be used. If you break a rule such as, well, you know, driving without a seatbelt, you've broken the contract and an administrative procedure will make you pay the penalty. A state citizen must be able to explain to the police officer why they're not required to have the usual paperwork that most people have. And that's easily done by just supplying them with your State Department identification card or your State Department passport when they run it. An unusual thing happens. They see on their monitor first it's red flag. That gets their attention real quick. I mean, red flag usually means that there's a problem, to expect danger. They're going to think about calling backup or whatever. But when they read on, it says, do not investigate, do not detain, release immediately. And also, lifetime concealed carry permit. You should carry copies of the affidavit that you're all familiar with, and there are other paperwork in your car as well. A state citizen should be prepared to go to traffic court if necessary and explain it to the judge. But usually it stops right there at the side of the road. I would encourage everyone on this call to take a copy of a collection that I put together. I titled it Once We Were Colonists, Subject to a King, Once We Were Colonists, and print it out and have a copy or two in your car. And when you get pulled over, after you get through done with all your things going on, say, Officer, I have a gift for you, and hand them, you know, get it bound up. It'll cost you a few bucks, but that's okay. Get it bound up and say, I have a gift for you. I want you to understand who you are in standing in law and how what you're doing to all the people, most all the people that are going up and down this interstate or wherever you happen to be on, that you are depriving them of their rights under color of law. And that's that concludes my opening remarks for tonight. And so the next step is we're going to go directly then to Q&A, questions and answers. Next week we'll summarize the course, if you would, that we go through, and then we'll pick up some other calls and questions. So press star 2 on your keypad, if you would, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand, and I'll do the best I can to answer your questions. For those of you on Freedom's Radio, you'll see on your monitor center to the right a box that where you can click inside of it and type away your comment or question. On the outside of the box, there's a place where you can put in your contact information, identify yourself for the callers here, and then hit submit. And I'll be glad to give voice to your comment or your question. I want to update you on where we are with the appointment setting. Bernie, bless his heart, we announced this last night that he was finishing up. He did finish it up. I have in my desktop here in a folder now a way to take your information, do a data entry onto a form, hit submit myself, and then it will populate everything in the DS-11 properly. So that'll be starting tomorrow. So that's the update on that. Let me hit refresh and see if anybody has raised their hands. We don't want to have a really too short call tonight. You know, we've got good people here with good questions. Let me go check Freedom's Radio. Just take a moment. Is there anybody on this call that has not gone through the process or begun the process to correct your status? You know, if there are, well, I see a few names I don't recognize that you might want to ask some questions and see what we're talking about. We covered last night, it seems like people want to know what the details are, the itemized process is. I'll cover that while we wait for this to populate. The hard news is the cost of this is $5,000. And the work that's done first is I simply get information from you, the name as it appears on your birth certificate, your current post location, which most everybody calls in error their address. Well, unless you're a United States citizen, then that would be your address. County that you sojourn at within that post location. You start with that. When I have that, then I that week I'll sit down and I will prepare an affidavit for you and a cover sheet for that affidavit and email it back to you. You then make an appointment someplace to get a notary to properly notarize your signature. And then you go to the post office, you get a manila envelope, you put your paperwork in the manila envelope, and then you take the manila envelope. You don't write on the manila envelope. So many people are writing on it, and it's not helping me out there. So you just put the papers in the manila envelope. You stick the manila envelope in a priority mail envelope. It'll cost you $8.90, $9. And then I'll have already provided you with the post location to send it to me, to post it to me. Once I have received it, then I can take that and begin processing your DS-11. You'll also get a blank for that in your emails, and you can fill that out as well. I probably should go ahead and cut corners and send the DS. Well, no, I can't do that without all the information first. So we'll get the DS-11 to you, and then you can just email that back to me, and then I can go ahead and use the program, the database extraction program that Bernie set up for me, and create the DS-11 properly. Now, the reason why I say properly, there are, and I'll give you just one example, and there's more than one trap, if you would, in these forms, whether it's the W8 bin or it's the DS-11 or whatever it is. For instance, it says, what country were you born in? Well, you automatically say United States. No. For me, it's Florida. For others, it's New York. For others, it's California. Those are the countries. When in 1959 or 58, when the territory known as Alaska was translated from a territory into one of the states of the Union to become one of the several states of this perpetual Union, the Congress themselves referred to Alaska as a new country in Union. New country. So there's things like that. And I take your worksheet, which is what it amounts to, that you fill out for the DS-11, and then I correct the parts that you got wrong, which we'll talk about then individually after that, so that you have a better understanding of what the DS-11 is about. Then once we have that, then I set up an appointment for you at a place local to you that is that has a representative for the State Department of the United States, and that's what it is in a nutshell. Now, there are many people that have been forwarding me other sources of that are out there of people offering you the opportunity to correct your status. We were on the call last night with PJ, and as well as the week before, not PJ, excuse me, GW. And GW explained some of the fatalities that are involved with these other groups. With their paperwork that they're doing. And just like it is with Bernie's trusts, there are other people out there that create charitable religious trusts or corporation soul. We had the opportunity several years ago, six, 7 years ago, where 48 corporation souls created by other crafters, if you would, in the United States. Bernie was able to get a copy of 48 of them. This was actually part of an investigation that was being done for someone in California that was just ripping people off. And anyways, of the 48, only two of them would pass muster under cross-examination. The other 46 had fatal flaws that if there were ever brought into court for whatever reason, they would have been pierced and voided, which is a horrible thing considering all that's at stake for the people that have gone to get a corporation soul and a charitable religious trust. Likewise, people that are doing the, correcting your status, if it's not done correctly, that occasion on the side of the road most likely will not turn out the way you want it to. Furthermore, there are many, many applications that are being explored right now with PJ and John, the team, if you would, that are being explored where people have been charged in the past, whether it's IRS matters or it's criminal matters, whatever. You've got something called malum prohibita laws and malum in se laws. Malum prohibita is just what it says. You can't do it because we say so. Malum in se laws are laws that are against the common law, if you would, the law of scripture, scriptural law. It's against scriptural law. You can't cheat, steal, lie, and so forth. Those are punishable as malum in se laws, and you're subject to them under American common law. You're not subject to them under their administrative laws or admiralty laws, whatever you want to call it. But you are subject to them under American common law. So we're going to be exercising and exploring the different leverage that this can bring us in the future. Correcting your status is so incredibly critical that no new students will come aboard, except for Bernie's, charitable religious trusts and corporation souls. Those are exempted because they're the other side of the coin, if you would. They're not this side of the coin. But anyone that wants to hire these the team to teach them how to correct their issues of whatever criminal charges or administrative charges that have been brought against them, they're going to be required to have already, if not have already corrected their status, but they'll be required to initiate correcting their status. Remember, it's the affidavit that holds the power. It's the passport and the pass card that are demonstrative of that power. But it's the affidavit itself and your testimony in court and being able to stand under inquisition by the judge or the prosecutor to make sure that you understand who you say you are, assert who you are. Again, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. I've done all the talking for the last 35 minutes, and we need to have some questions. If not, we're going to end this call early. While you're thinking about pressing star 2 on your keypad, I'm going to go over here at Freedoms Radio and see if there are any other questions that have been raised here. Give me just one second. Yeah, we've got, where can I find a tape of this call to share with a friend? First off, if you have my direct email, just email me and request it. If you have a text, if you have my phone number, direct phone number, just text me and ask for it and give me your email address, and I'll get you a copy of tonight's recording. If you don't have either of that and have no way to know how to get in touch with me, then always we start with my 800 number. The 800 number is offered generally. Everybody knows it. You can also use it to get a free cup of coffee at Panera's if you like. I pay for that service. That's my account number for them. So it's 800-625-4250. 800-625-4250. I'll come back and check Freedoms Radio. If you didn't happen to have a pen to write it down, I'll come back and give it to you again if you ask for it, just in writing. Harold, welcome to the call. What's your question?
Hi, Michael.
Hey there.
Just listening. I listened to a brief, maybe about 15, 20 minutes of a call regarding Anna Van Rights, and they were talking about, they use the term correcting your status, but there's got to be a difference between what they do and what GW does.
Yeah, there's, right? And GW has gone into some degree on the last two or three Monday night calls. He spent a few moments on it. I'd encourage you to be on next Monday night's call to exploit that considerably. It's on one hand, it's not right to. I was in the jewelry business all my life. I started when I was 16 years old, and when I was 24, I opened up my own store. The two jewelers that were generational jewelers in my town, so in other words, I was dealing with the sons or the grandsons of the founding of these stores, and they were so well seated in the community, it was ridiculous. And they hated, they just didn't like me because I was not a traditional jeweler. I was trained and grew up in sales. Zales Jewelers are the people that taught me the business model that I opened under. And from there, then I went into the basement level of doing my own work or on the premises and repairs and manufacturing and stuff like that. The point that I'm getting at is that the customers would come in that wanted to investigate, the fact. See, I did my jewelry work in the front of the store. You had when you walked in, there was on the outside, you could directly look into the shop. When you're inside the store, there was a wall that was a glass wall. You could directly watch everything that was going on in the repair shop, in the manufacturing shop. Everything was there. And so they'd be curious and come in and say, that so-and-so jeweler, he just is riding you up and down. And I said, I know. I heard that before. And then I'd, bring them over to the showcase and show them this and show them that. I did a lot of estate work, which is something that the other jewelers did not do. And what that meant was that people in the town that had passed on, their children just wanted to liquidate and so forth. There was some interesting pieces of jewelry, some of it, back in the 20s and handcrafted work and things that you just don't see today. And then when I say today, I'm talking about 30, 40 years ago. They just don't see it anymore. And so I would take them coming in the store and, you know, out of curiosity, show them what jewelry was really about in that sense. And then they would end up purchasing from me. And I had major purchases that were made over time. So when asked about my competition as a jeweler, my reply, in fact, I did this on television once because they I was doing a donation thing, you know, for March of Dimes or whatever it was, I don't remember. And it was really crude on the part of the newscaster or the reporter to ask me the question. But they says, well, you know, your competition in your town doesn't have nice things to say about you. Which they were probably, you know, friends of them and trying to just make me look bad on television. And I came back and says, you know what, I'm aware of that. But, you know, they've given me some of my very best customers. Some of my very best customers have come from them. So I let them talk. I'm happy. Mm-hmm. So the point is that we're not interested. I'm not eager to talk about Anna Von Reitz or any of the other people that are offering these services because it's really not professional or in good taste. But I will say that if you do your investigations, you dot your I's and cross your T's, do your due diligence between what these various people are offering. There's one up there that charges, I think, $150 to, you know, with the same claims that we're having over here for $5,000. And all I can say is study and show yourself approved.
And good luck.
You get what you pay for. Yeah, you get what you pay for. Here's something else really important to consider. We have a team in place that is proactive, fully activated to assist the student in any issue that they're dealing with. So on the other hand, you've got people like Anna Von Reitz and other groups out there that are offering this service, but where's the support? There is none. Nobody's going to walk with you into court. Not that we can walk into court with you or would, because it requires permission of the courts to allow a Seventh Amendment counsel to come in with you. But again, once people like PJ and John have had their status corrected, it's going to be hard for them to say no. Anyway, there's all sorts of stuff that we're playing with, but we're there to be part of the team with you.
Second question is, are the calls on Monday and Tuesday night, are they listed somewhere or recorded?
Yes. If you go to www.correctmystatus.com, you'll see a recently published tab. It says Archive, and if you click on that, you'll see where you can listen to the recording there, or you can download it for yourself onto your computer. Now, I learned today that there's a problem that they're not streaming and they're not downloading, but we'll have that corrected in a day or shortly. We'll have them corrected this week, I'm sure.
Okay, so they'll be on that site. Okay.
Yeah.
And the last question.
Before we get to your last question, Correct My Status literally was thrown together from American by Birth, and it's not pretty, it's not professional looking, but it works, or it's going to be working soon. Then we'll get and make it pretty later, but right now we're just trying to get the information to you. What's your last question or third question?
If I email you a request, can you send the documents from last night and tonight's call?
Last night's call was 4.9 megs, and I can't email the archive for that.
It makes such. I love the beginning of it when you talk about all that stuff, because I can do the research off of there, you know.
Sure.
So that's why I like it. But you can't do that, okay?
But if you go to correctmystatus.com, listen and click on the archive tab. I don't know. Just check it every day. My programmer's working on it to make them functional.
Okay.
Hmm?
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Harold. Appreciate that. Anyone else, press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. While you're thinking about that or gathering your courage, I will go over to Freedoms Radio and see if there's a follow-up question over there. Hit refresh. Nope, no follow-ups there. Hey there, Elmer. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. Good to see you. Anyone have a question? Press star 2 on your keypad. I'm going to unmute Michael in Las Vegas just simply because I know that he's always got something good to say. Yeah, I'll pick on you. So, what do you got, Michael? Your mic, you're open.
Well,
here. Go ahead.
Evening, everybody.
Good evening.
What most everybody has been conditioned to in this country is to have somebody else do it for you, get it done as cheap as possible, and if somebody will do it cheaper, well, we'll just go ahead and go with them, irrespective of the ramifications later on down the road. But they all want to eat steak, but they want McDonald's prices.
Well, the thing is, in this case, we're doing it for you. We're not throwing you the raw data and say, here, put this together, and then I will make an appointment with whomever and go from there. We're not doing that. There's too many variables involved. When you ask for a W-8 bin, and I get you to fill it out, then I make the corrections and send it back to you. You'll understand when you fill out the DS-11 and you fill it out, and then I make the corrections on this end and I send it back to you to use, and you do a comparison between the two, you're going to go, oh my, I don't understand. Why did we put, you know, in your case, why did we put Nevada as the country I'm in? I'm not in the country of Nevada. I'm in the state of Nevada. No, you're not. You're in a country. It's called Nevada, and it is not the United States. So when you see those things, it starts to muscle you to ask questions. Number one, and number two, had you gone into the meeting with what you gave me to begin with, you would have still been a United States citizen when you left. Anyways, just wanted to share that.
Well, we've been indoctrinated for so long in this country, I can't blame people. But I've been on this route for since 2010. And I read and study and continuously pull stuff up, and I talk to people, and I give them like your this podcast number. You ought to listen to this. And then they'll come back and say, well, we've got this guy over here, and he's got this stuff that's it's not the same. It's similar, but it's not the same. And they're trying to sell you a trust of some kind. And it's like, well, you can make a decision, but you need to make a decision based on what's in the law. What does the law say? What does the Constitution say? What does the Bill of Rights say? Because you have to, if you don't understand that when you go into a commercial setting and you're speaking street language in their commercial setting, which they call courts, you lose.
Correct.
And it all right. comes down to the semantics that people use.
All right. Let's drive over to see Grandma tonight. No, you're not driving over there. You're traveling over there. Anyways, Kent, you raised your hand. What you got?
Good evening, Mike.
Good evening.
Three things, actually. In the past, you were talking about how once the status is corrected and one has their passport and passport card, that there's other things to look at. Now, I noticed GW, from what he says, doesn't put a lot of stress on such things as license plates or tags, from what he said about the card he travels in. But, of course, there's a lot of other issues. There's a lot of state issues. There's sales tax issues. There's gun issues, and probably many more if we were to make a list of them. Have you thought through, you did say something in the past about requesting from the state after you had this done for yourself, a special plate, if I recall correctly. Have the rest of these processes been thought through or processes been thought through regarding cards that would exempt one from sales taxes and the like, anything that wasn't apportioned, so to speak, either sales or on a federal level, gas taxes, other things that wouldn't be necessarily considered apportioned? Has this been thought through on both a state and federal level and where to go to accomplish this? Or will this be part of a future package?
All right. This will be part of a future package. Let's just pretend that today I received in the post from the State Department of the United States, I got my passport and I got my state ID Department of State ID card. First thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to go with an envelope of cash down to a local gun shop, and I'm going to order from them, ask to order from them, and have the cash there to pay for it, a particular kind of a shotgun. And if you want to search, use your search engine, it's AA-12 shotgun. Look it up. This is a select fire, meaning fully automatic. You can use fully automatic. The barrel magazine can hold 100 rounds. It has the nickname of Street Sweeper. It's only available to the military and to the police. But it also should be available to me with a corrected status. So that will be my first thing I want to do. See how far I get down the road with it. Soon after that, I will make a trip to Tallahassee. I will make communication with the State Department of Florida and also with the Department of Motor Vehicles in Florida. And I will attempt to make a meeting where I can sit down with them, show them, and explain to them who I am and who we are, if you would, as Floridians and not United States citizens, and say every time that I get pulled over because I don't have a tag on my car, on my automobile, my private utility unit, it's actually the technical word is appliance, like you have kitchen appliances. This is an appliance. The four wheels on the ground is an appliance. If you have a motorcycle, two wheels on the ground, it's an appliance. Every time I get pulled over, then there'll be something called deprivation of rights under color of law. And you know, in your statutes, not mine, in your statutes, you have under Title 18, has Title 18 242, and or is it Title 18, Section 42, I guess is what it is. And then on Title, I've already forgotten it. I'm having a brain freeze on it. Title 42, 1983, 1985, and 1986, and then Title 18, Section 242. That you have your expression of deprivation of rights under the color of law, but we understand that those are only for federal citizens. Under American common law, under the Seventh Amendment of the Constitution, you have that verbiage to accomplish the same thing. It was there actually before you were. There are existing today, I'll be saying to them, over 100 people now that are willing and able and wanting to come together to form a grand jury, to begin investigating and possibly indicting United States citizens for deprivation of our rights under color of law. A foreign judgment will ultimately come out of that and attempt to be entered into your records as a foreign judgment. And you're potentially looking at millions and millions and millions of dollars in damages each and every time. We can circumvent this very easily. Every State Department, including the State Department of the United States, the State Department of Florida, they can issue what's called diplomatic tags. And they do. I see one here in town where I am frequently, at Panera's. They pull in. They got diplomatic plates. So when the police, the law enforcement pull up behind them because they're doing 85, you know, they may pass them and give them a dirty look, but they're not going to be doing anything with them because they have no standing to do anything. So, yes, there's all of these things. John on the team today spent 7.5 hours with the attorney general, assistant attorney general in California, one of the assistant attorney generals in California, between the sheriffs and the assistant state attorneys regarding a matter, which ultimately, even though it has nothing to do with correcting your status is actually foundational to it. There's going to be a lot of very interesting outcomes and things that are explored, but you know we haven't got there yet. We're getting there now.
And do you see something also on the tax angle that I mentioned, such as sales taxes and other taxes, both on a state and federal level?
Yes. All you have to do is keep every receipt, and then you know you can process those. You should be able to. We will be doing that. I'm a receipt keeper anyway, so it's not going to be difficult for me. Other people, they never keep their receipts. But if you, you know, have a stack of papers at the end of the month of receipts, you should be able to go to the State Department of your state that you're in, the country that you're in, if you would, and have a refund check cut for you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be exploring everything.
Okay, so you'll leave no stone unturned, in other words.
Well, you're going to be helpful in the matter, Kent, because you have great ideas. You have great questions. So don't be surprised if you're an extension of the team that we're putting together. Right now, we've gone from 2 to 7 people in this team. We're now 7 in this team, and we're going even larger than that as we move forward. And when the event happens, whether it's the GCR or it's another contract that's expected to close, when it closes, then funds are going to be available to do it upright, and I will do it upright to the best of my ability.
On the second thing that I wanted to speak about, on the passport cards, now I know it's a little early because you haven't gotten them back yet, but there apparently is some differentiation, and this was alluded to in a prior call some time ago, there is apparently some differentiation in the number of stars that are above one's head or directly below the writing United States, I believe. Have you found any more information on that as to, let's say, the difference in 3 stars versus 5 and whether there's a
No.
period under which time that will change?
No, I've not had any investigation on that at all.
Okay. So we don't know. We can't say that for sure then either way at this point.
Correct. Now, what we do
okay.
know is that what we do know is that with the State Department ID card, or some refer to it as the passport card, you can use that to travel the Caribbean, South America, Mexico, this hemisphere, if you would. You can use it for that. But to go to Europe or any place else in the world, you have to use the full passport.
So, in other words, that card, that wasn't my understanding, but you're saying that your understanding is that that card is good throughout North America and all of South America, which includes, obviously, Central America and the Caribbean?
Yes. That's my understanding.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And the third part mm-hmm. of what I wanted to speak about was you were talking about the Seventh Amendment and requiring permission to bring your own counsel into the courtroom. And I've gone through that issue, not too successfully, but I've certainly tried that issue before. Do you see if you know anything about this, the state bar acts, where they actually, apparently most states have them, and it's where the bar integrated into the judicial, if you will, branch of government. Or some would argue they integrated into the administrative branch of government. Would you see those acts, again, if you know anything about this, would you see those state bar acts as being something that could defeat the issue of having to get permission to bring counsel that's not a bar member into a courtroom.
I heard an expression that one of the team members made in telling a story where he was in court and he had been teaching and coaching the defendant. The defendant got to a place where the court had taken him in the deep water, and he's not that good a swimmer. The fellow stood up and said, "Your Honor, permission to approach amicus curiae." And the judge, went through, "Who are you, blah, 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 blah." And he says, "Well, what do you have to say?" And he says, "Well, would it please this court to be made aware of something that could have a negative repercussion of a substantial nature, either upon the court or upon the bench?" And then from there, he began quoting specific constitutional, enumerations within the Constitution, within the Bill of Rights, et cetera, and also court decisions that supported what he had to say. And the outcome of that was that the case was dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
So he did not even appear as counsel. He was sitting in the gallery in the first pew closest to the bar and made his question and comment from the gallery.
And the case ended up being vacated or dismissed?
Dismissed. Yeah. It got hostile for a little bit, and then this fellow on the team is very cool-headed. He's very chill. And he kept a strong hand on the wheel, keeping everything governed, quiet, and peaceful. And whenever the judge had something that would lead to, I can hold you in contempt of court. Well, yes, Your Honor, you could, but you'd be needing to consider the ramifications of that in respect to, and then he'd quote another court case. And all this stuff is on the top of his head. The people that are in, I call up the A team and the B team. The A team have got some really sharp cookies in there. It's just like Bernie's on the A team, and you can talk to him about trust, and he's just rattling off different court cases and different things that apply right off the top of his head. There's no "let me get back to you" on that. He's talking to you right then and there. Same with this fellow.
Well, I understand there's a recent court case. I'm trying to get some more information on it. I don't know all the details. In a federal court where three fellows that were being tried for something on a federal basis or were indicted went in and brought a paper with them which spoke about and enumerated in such a way, just like you're talking about, boom, 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 with all the backup. And they gave it to the judge to sign. And in essence, it was about their rights and what could happen if you don't consider the ramifications of what you're doing. I was told that the judge signed it, and then shortly thereafter, the cases against these three people were dropped, but I'm attempting to get more information on that at this time. So,
I'd like very much for you to share that with me when you do get it.
Okay, we'll do.
One other thing that I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all. That's all I have. Go ahead.
One other thing that we'll be doing after the event takes place is I will, from concentrically from where I am and then working outwards, I will be visiting U.S. Marshal offices, introducing myself and, sharing with them what's going on and what their duties that they should be considering in upholding. Only a U.S. Marshal can arrest a judge. You know that, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So what I'd like to try to do is to have U.S. Marshals available, and they'll have to be paid. They're not going to do it on their hourly. They'll do it off time if they're going to do it at all, is to bring them into the courtroom gallery and just let them sit in the gallery. And then as the litigation moves forward and, questions are asked of the judge and the judge, you know, deprives the defendant of some right then and there, then, you know, have a as gentle as possible a controversy come through where somebody else in the gallery stands up and says, I am a U.S. Marshal, shows his badge or whatever, and says that you have to answer the defendant's question or I'll be arresting you. Because it's deprivation of rights under color of law that he's witness to. So there's a lot of backroom conversations right now that are just exploratory. You know, we have no idea where it's going to take us, but we're going to take that trip. I know that there's a fellow on the call I'm looking at here, Tom, that I think what everything that I'm saying to right now is exciting to him because he's lived through this. He knows what's going on, you know, in that sense. Anyways. Anybody
well, it's unlimited.
Star two. What?
I was saying it's unlimited. I mean, the facets, there are so many things today. It's just unlimited what can be worked on.
Yeah. This okay, was, thank I, you. I, yeah, I call what my plan, I call it a 100-year plan because it will long last, it'll long be in existence after I'm gone, and prayerfully I'll have time to that the team will grow to where there's an A team, a B team, and a C team, so that when the A team passes on, the B team is able to step right up to the A team level and start playing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Anyone else press star 2 on your keypad and raise your hand? I'm going to go check Freedom's Radio. If there's nobody here when I get back, then we're going to say goodnight. Refresh. No further questions from Freedom's Radio. Let me see what the count is there. Good numbers. Well, it appears that everybody is done for the evening. Thank you so much for joining us. Please be reminded to go to correctmystatus.com, www.correctmystatus.com. There's an archive tab. Click on that, and prayerfully soon, tomorrow maybe, day after tomorrow, I don't know, but keep clicking on the archives there to listen to them. You'll have both GW's and tonight's call on the archives. Good night, everybody. Until then, be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.